No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. Glad to see people back after the weekend. That was a long weekend. Lots happened. There was lots of activity going on. And everybody, I hope they all had a good time because the weather was quite nice out there in Blighty, at least. I hope it was nice for the rest of the world. I can't assure that it was, though. I do hope you all had a lovely time. And now the cold chill of winter wind is behind us. We're able to venture out of the house more and get more active. Talking of which, I will remind you that there are a few events happening this month, but I'll go into a little detail on that after this. Because at the moment, we are in a total mess, societally speaking. As people who take in the alternative news, we are much more likely to see through the blatant propaganda that the most of the folk tuning into the mainstream media. And we always see through most of their BS, but we all have our blind spots and contradictions, and contradicting narratives are happening in abundance right now. Many of us who desire a safe society know that the only way to achieve this is by having managed immigration, which takes every nuance into account. Instead, our societies are being purposely flooded with thousands of people daily, all over the Western world. People who are fleeing the results of Western meddling in their countries of origin. We, the people, have no say over any of this. We watch our communities changing rapidly around us, and if we question what is going on, we are almost always painted as horrible racists by those in the MSM and those who follow their lead, whichever direction they go. But the people who are manufacturing the consent for this excessive and dangerous immigration policy don't live in the communities where immigration is the problem. They live in Millionaires Row, almost completely protected from the damage that is inflicted on our society. The white people who rule the roost in the United Kingdom congregate in places such as Chipping Norton, where you don't have homeless and jobless immigrants living on the street. Yet if we say it's unfair, then almost the entirety of Chipping Norton would raise up in combined chorus to tell us how racist we are. In fact, if you want to stop these wild immigration policies, then it should be mandated that all immigrants should be placed where the average wage is highest. We would soon see the agenda halt abruptly if we were to do that. I promise you that. Now, yesterday, I met a Nigerian horn blower, and that isn't a euphemism. He was actually blowing a horn. A beautiful individual who I sat with for a while, and he told me all about his life, his hopes and dreams, his aspirations, as well as his journey to the UK. And he had arrived in London, but soon became disenchanted with the capital very quickly, because in his own words, there were no British people there. It was all foreigners. I had to explain something which even Brits don't truly understand. That has always been the way London is. As a capital city, it has always been one of the first port of call for those arriving in the UK to look for a permanent place to settle. The only thing that has changed is the immigrants in London are no longer white Europeans and instead tend to be black, Arabic, or Asian. But my Nigerian friend wanted to know Britain. He didn't want to hang around in a foreign country which looked like Britain, so he came to Wales instead. But for the people of Wales, immigration is also out of control. Many of the hotels which are housing these economic migrants that have recently arrived have become the centres of organised protests. People who are passionate about the issues have gone to these migrant hotels to protest, and again, they've all been painted as racist, of course. But having such hotspots ready to erupt into public protests are very useful for the authorities and establishment too, as well as the narrative seeding press. Such protests will always attract both people with genuine concerns alongside the people who do just want to cause issues. And even a few real red-blooded racists too are in there. Watching these events is a little cringeworthy for myself because I see other actors at work too. Whenever you have an emotive and public issue such as immigration, you see that sparks protests. You also have police-led operations to co-opt the protests. I have stood in amongst some of these protests and watched as former police and others with significant ties to the police lead the protesters in both direction and action. Sometimes their actions make sense, but on other occasions their actions can only make sense if you're actually controlled opposition. People can easily become controlled opposition during these sort of events if they're following a leader, and those in power create the supposed Hegelian antithesis of their own stance, and they install their own leaders to do so. If you're part of a protest movement, which is being organized by a small group, be vigilant. Be suspicious of former police officers and state actors guiding your every move. These are massive red flags that should inform you that your movement has been co-opted. This is especially so during emotive protest movements. Open your eyes. They let immigration get out of control. They make you angry about it. Then they funnel you into a box and they control you. This is going on all over the Western world. Now, the Weekend Truth Festival is getting closer and closer. If you would like to see all your favorite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend, then listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shemirani, I'll get that name right in one go eventually, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizia, Mark Atwood, David Clues, allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need is to bring a tent and a sleeping bag and some good vibes as food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. But don't hang around because only a limited number of places are still available. You're listening to today's news talk on TNT.
Your voice heard here.
The government needs to step up and do its job.
Today's news talk radio, TNT.
So on Saturday, the U.S. House of Representatives approved a bill requiring TikTok to be sold or banned. And apparently, this was accomplished by incorporating it into emergency spending on Russian, Ukraine, and Israel-Hamas conflicts. Here with the story, join me now is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Tell us more.
Yeah, these SOBs, I tell you what, this is how we do it. Something is controversial, we're not getting support, well, we're just going to sneak it into something else, right? This is ridiculous. Go America. So they've been targeting TikTok for a while now. U.S., other Western officials here in America, it's kind of across party lines, as far as lawmakers are concerned, both Republican and Democrats, including the Biden administration, have all voiced their concerns, their apprehension over the Chinese TikTok thing. They have a reason. They say that it would allow Beijing to spy on its users, which would normally not a big deal if it were not for the fact that TikTok has 170 million users right here in the United States. And critics point out that TikTok could be subservient to Beijing through its parent company and a conduit to spread propaganda. China, of course, as well as the company, deny these claims. But as I indicated, they have tried to get it through, and it would appear they are on their way halfway there. Anyways, it's still got to go to the Senate. So yes, this bill, which targets the TikTok app, has once again been approved by the U.S. House. This time, as I mentioned, it was shoehorned into a comprehensive package which addressed international affairs and foreign adversaries, including, of course, Russia, the whole thing going on with Israel and Hamas. These broader repercussions make it difficult, as it were, for the Senate to delay its assessment of the proposal. The bill came with an overwhelming support of 360 to 58 votes. So, wow. Previously, the standalone version of the so-called TikTok ban bill that won the House's approval at 352 to 65 last month had been languishing in the limbo of the Senate without a clear path forward. Its future appeared uncertain amid undecided sentiments from many senators. However, the shift in attitudes became palpable once the bill was strategically wedged into the foreign aid bundle. A contributing factor towards the change in attitude could be the updated language within the new bill, according to Reclaim the Net. They say the bill offers ByteDance, TikTok's parent company, a more flexible deadline to finalize the sale of TikTok. While the previous proposal only provided a six-month window, the fresh legislation stretches the divestment period to up to 9 months, with a potential extension of an additional 3 months at the president's discretion. The president, speaking of which, has pledged to sign off on the TikTok legislation if it gets that far. If I'm not mistaken, under this bill, ByteDance will have to sell the app within the time limit or be excluded from Apple and Google's app stores in the United States. So there we have it on the TikTok thing. We could get a little bit into the funding if you like, Johnny, but what say you about this part?
Yeah, I noticed Ian Carroll was sitting outside with a few other TikTokers, and they were trying to get some form of support to stop the sale. But I think they'd already done the job. They were going to push it through any way they can. This was the sneakiest way they could put it through as well, to hide it within other bills. Not really hidden. Everybody kind of knew it. But once they've pushed at this enough times, and eventually the people who were in charge, well, they bend over, don't they, and just accept it, bow to the masters. I can't even understand how they're going to sell such a company if they're going to do that. What, they're going to have a TikTok that's America and TikTok everywhere else in the world? Or are they going to sell TikTok en masse to the Americans? Is this something that they're going to start trying to do, steal other countries' media corporations by banning them unless they sell them to America? So I you know, I see there's a lot of people now, a lot of people who go on to TikTok just don't understand what's going on there, to be honest. I don't. Most of the time I go on TikTok and it's mainly cleavage shots and women dancing about, and that draws in attention. But there are people who are making a living from doing this sort of work, because this is the modern face of social media, isn't it? These quick shorts. And, you know, for me, I'm not going to miss it too much, partially because TikTok have banned multiple accounts that I've had and closed them down anyway. So I don't understand how the people who are on there speaking about other stuff have managed to stay on there for so long, because they do seem to really, they have a much more serious control than somewhere like Twitter does. Is there any sign of how they're going to work this sale, Ruckus?
No, for its part, ByteDance is just coming out expressing how dismayed they are by the with the decision for them to try to slip this into the foreign aid thing as a sneaky way to get this passed. What did they say? TikTok, the company TikTok, said in a statement, quote, "It is unfortunate that the House of Representatives is using the cover of important foreign and humanitarian assistance to once again jam through a ban bill that would trample the free speech rights of 170 million Americans," end quote. And that's the point right there. Most of the criticism against this ban is coming from the free speech advocates. The American Civil Liberties Union, take them with a grain of salt, ACLU, has opposed it on those grounds. The Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University, interestingly enough, we'll be talking about them later, has also criticized the latest bill, arguing that its effectiveness is limited, as adversaries such as China could still access American data through brokers and utilize U.S.-based social media platforms for disinformation campaigns. So what's really at the heart of this? Do you think maybe one day if they are going to sell it and we have an American buyer, is it going to be Elon Musk and he's just going to incorporate it into his everything app? That's my guess, Johnny.
Oh, that's a good guess, isn't it? That's a good guess. Oh, along comes the savior, Elon Musk, to put another egg in one basket. They love this at the moment, don't they? This everything app where we all get funneled in because it's the place to go for freedom of speech. And then suddenly it's the place where you can restrict all freedom of speech at once. I mean, it is the oldest trick in the book. And people have treated Elon Musk like he is a hero when he's a Department of Defense lackey, really. I mean, nearly all of his money has been made by dealing with the state itself, and that would make a hell of a lot of sense. Well, we'll see if that happens. I'm sure you'll be back to tell us more news in the second hour.
Oh yes, sir. I'll see you then.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Right, you're listening to today's News Talk TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
I really don't think that they've thought this through, because say you get to the year, 2040, and anyone who's under 31 will not be allowed to buy cigarettes, and anyone who's over 31 will be allowed to. How is that going to be enforced? Will the shops require ID from 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds in the future to see whether they're allowed to purchase tobacco products or not? At the moment, there's no issue, as I say, but in the future, it's going to be completely ridiculous. I don't think that shops will want to do that. It will be essentially unenforceable.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's News Talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Redmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. My first guest up is a man who knows all about the coming financial apocalypse. Parallel Mike is an investor, an organic farmer who promotes decentralized living as a solution to state tyranny. A good solution it is too. He is also a content creator and host of the Must Watch Parallel Systems broadcast. You can follow him on X at @parallel_Mike or visit his website parallelmike.com. Mike, my friend, happy to have you on once again. How are you today?
Healthy. That's about as good as we can ask for these days.
I need to do a bit of that for sure. I was thinking that before I come on. Tell me, Mike, as we face massive changes in the financial system, why is it so important to learn about investing in commodities such as gold and silver?
Oh, well, that's a good question. And, you know, I'm going to have to pull you up on half of the question, Johnny, purely because I think it's fair to say silver is a commodity, and silver does behave a lot like a commodity, although throughout history it had this dual role as money. In fact, it was money for a long time, but then it kind of got relegated to a commodity because it is used so much in industry. You know, there's lots of green technologies, for example, that use a lot of silver. In the past, it was used a lot in photography. Today, they also use it in, you know, photovoltaics, electronic vehicles. There's a lot of uses for silver. Now, gold, on the other hand, doesn't actually have that many uses. Only about 10% of it is used outside of metals that are used for, using it as a metal for jewelry or for investment purposes. So gold's main role historically has always been as money. And I would argue it's still money today. And we know that because the central banks are all buying a lot of gold. They're doing record levels of buying right now. China's been buying it up ever since 2008, which is a big clue because they saw what was happening to the financial system. But for most of history, it was money as well, John. It was only in 1971 when we went to this fiat system, which is where we have essentially money that's backed by nothing. Its intrinsic value is zero. And therefore, as Voltaire once said, it will eventually return to its intrinsic value, which is zero. So that's why it's so important to understand things like silver and gold now, purely because they're assets that people can hold that have that intrinsic value. So if the paper money does return to its intrinsic, which is zero, these things will retain their value. And of course, the reason for that is they're extremely difficult to extract and it costs a lot of money. So silver is a commodity and it behaves like one, whereas gold behaves much more like a wealth preserver, which is essentially money. That's what money's meant to be, right? That you can have your wealth stored in this thing we call money, and in 10 years' time, it still has at least the same amount of value. You know, you don't want it to go down in value. The problem with the fiat system, of course, is the paper money is devalued constantly, and it all is based on trust. And I don't trust the governments or the central banks, and I don't think you do either. So therefore, we have to find something we can trust, and that's where the precious metals come in.
That's really interesting, the difference between gold and silver there. And it makes me wonder, with silver with so many uses, does the fact that it's more in abundance on Earth, I suppose, than gold, mean that shouldn't it have a higher value than it currently does?
Yeah, a lot of people believe that. I mean, the coming out of the ground ratio is about 15 to 1. So for every... and 1 ounce of gold, you'll get around 15 ounces of silver. And silver is much easier to find because it comes out with a lot of other metals. So when they're mining for copper or nickel or iron, oftentimes they get silver as a byproduct, because once they're down there in these pit mines, they take whatever they can get. Whatever they find, they'll drag it out. But if they're specifically looking for copper, they'll be focused on that, but they will get silver out with it too. Now, in terms of the price of silver, both gold and silver are heavily manipulated markets for the simple fact that they can expose the fiat system. So if you have gold going up very quickly in value, that tells people that the currencies are actually devaluing. So if we go back to, say, 1971 and then fast forward to today, gold's averaged in pretty much every major currency about 10 to 12% each year. Now, that's not gold going up in value, because how can it? It's just a metal that comes out of the ground. That's our currencies devaluing against gold. So we're actually seeing the currencies die against it. And that's why you have this continuous climbing gold. Now, silver, on the other hand, is much more volatile. It can go up 50% in a year sometimes. It can go up 20 to 30% multiple times in a year and then crash just as fast. Gold doesn't do that. Gold's very stable as a wealth preserver. But because of silver's industrial use, it is very much exposed to supply and demand. So it's got this cyclicality, and you'll see these big cycles and then mini cycles. And yeah, it's a far more wild ride if you're investing in silver than if you are in gold. Gold is what we say, gold's for widows and orphans. Silver's not. Silver's not for widows and orphans. It's for people who are maybe a little bit more speculative. However, there are other uses for silver too. Like, for example, if you go into a serious financial meltdown, you're probably not going to be using gold to trade and barter. It's too much value there. What gold does is it allows you to have a vehicle to take you from a dying system to a new system, to transfer wealth from one era to another era. And that's been seen throughout history. You know, every single fiat system has died, every single hyperinflation, it was always gold that you went to take you from one system to the next. However, silver, because of its lower value, you can use it in trade and barter. You know, let's imagine you come to my house and I've got eggs and you want to buy some of those eggs off me. And I say, Johnny, what have you got to trade? And you say, well, I don't have anything to trade, but I do have some of these old silver coins. Well, I'd be quite happy to take them, because I know those silver coins are going to be worth something in 5 months, 10 months, 2 years, whatever. It's going to have that intrinsic value. So silver's still really important. It's a really useful metal. Fantastic use, but you just need to understand those critical differences. If you buy silver today, it could be down 30-40% tomorrow. Probably not going to happen with gold, however. Silver's a bit more like the cryptos, actually, in Bitcoin, in that volatility. That's a good way for people to understand it.
That's a really interesting... thank you very much for that explainer, because you just taught me a lot in a very short amount of time. You're very good at doing that. Now, I was talking to someone else who teaches me a lot in a very short amount of time, Tim Hinchliffe, last week, who was reporting on the FinTnet, the financial internet that's being created. How do you think they will encourage normal people to adopt the infrastructure like this for the introduction of CBDCs?
You know, I think we're already seeing it. I think we've been living through it since 2009. I think the whole cryptocurrency development and the push for NFTs I don't think they've really been opposing that in any meaningful way. I think it was a lot of smoke and mirrors. So I think we're already living through it. Young people are not looking to things like gold and silver. They're certainly not going to the stock market. That's kind of us dinosaurs now who look at those things and say, look at the past, look at history, look at gold. That's where they're going to go to when they reset the system. But young people don't think like that. They go to cryptocurrencies, and that's happened over the space of just 10 years. You know, 5 years ago, I would say 90% of people had no idea what cryptocurrencies were. Today, I would say 90% of people do know. So I think we're living through that transition. And I probably guess, in my opinion, that there's been a Hegelian dialectic here. There's the CBDCs and there's the cryptocurrencies, and it's one or the other, you know, and people say, oh, Bitcoin's for freedom, cryptocurrencies are for freedom. Maybe, or maybe it was just set up this way to get us all convinced to adopt things that otherwise we might have seen as unlikely, you know, unlikely to adopt something like that's a digital token. So, you know, I'm more skeptical on those things. I think they've been very good for speculations for people who wanted to increase their wealth. However, I think we could see the old double cross at some point where the CBDCs are actually not where we're going to. We're going to something that's going to be, okay, we're going to give you private digital currencies and you get to choose. I think that might actually be what happens. And maybe the CBDCs were always there just to kind of make us panic and make us worry. So when we do get given these cryptocurrencies in the future of some sort, that we actually accept them and we're happy about it. Maybe, I'm not sure. I'm just putting it out there as a possible theory. But yeah, I would say today most people understand these things and most people will be quick to adopt them. CBDCs, okay, let's say they do go to them, the average man and woman on the street, they'll probably accept out of desperation, Johnny. Most people don't have more than a month's salary in the bank. If you have a great financial crisis like 2008, but they don't fix it this time, and we have some kind of financial reset that goes to CBDCs, what are they going to do? You know, if they can't feed themselves, it'll be just sign up, go get a digital ID, get yourself a wallet, and we'll put some money in there. I would say 85% of people would be in there by the end of the next day. So yeah. So that's why it's never been more important to be aware of where we are in history, where we are in the cycles of debt and empire, and to make your decisions now where you want to go in the future and prepare for it, because whichever route you take, it's going to require some sacrifices. If you want to be in the system, you're going to have to get digital IDs and CBDCs or a private currency if they do allow that. If not, you want to be outside the system, well, you're going to have an even more difficult time of it. So you're going to have to think about growing your own food, living in a community, and maybe making changes now to prepare for that, because it could happen so fast. You know, all it would take is one big cyber attack or one big great financial collapse that they don't recover from, and there you are, we're in the next system.
One big cyber polygon. Well, we're going to go to a quick news break for 30 seconds. You're listening to today's news talk on TNT.
Hey, what are you guys doing?
We're breaking news.
Oh, okay, carry on.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. After the U.S. House of Representatives passed a long-delayed Ukraine aid bill, Democratic congressional candidate Nate McMurray from New York stirred controversy with a provocative post on X. Following the House's approval of $61 billion in additional funding for Ukraine, McMurray tweeted, Slava Ukraine, followed by Die MAGA Die, you lose. A recent NBC News poll indicates a significant drop in interest among American voters for the 2024 presidential election.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Welcome back. I'm here with Parallel Mike, and we're talking about certain things about currencies and the new currencies coming in. And one of the things we were just talking about was CBDCs. Now, a very quick question I got. If they don't create a cyber pandemic and they just introduced CBDCs upon us normally as a competitive, a natural competitive currency, and they had expiry dates and tight restrictions, would they just be heading towards being a dead asset?
Yeah, I don't think people would accept them because ultimately the reason they want CBDCs is to control people, right? That's the outline that they've already given us, that we want to give you expiry dates, that we want to be able to have restrictions on the money so that we can control how much you have, where you spend it. They've already said that. So I don't think it would work, Johnny. I think it would lead to some kind of systemic collapse of society if you tried to do that. And we saw an example of this just recently in Nigeria. They said to people in Nigeria, you've got 2 weeks to change over from the fiat notes and coins to our new e-naira. And nobody did it. So they said, okay, now you've got 2 more weeks. And we really mean it this time. You've got 2 weeks. Nobody did it again. So then they said, well, okay, because you haven't followed the rules, because you haven't done what we've said, we're going to limit the amount you can get out of a bank. And they limited it to such a restrictive amount that it led to the economy collapsing and businesses failing. So then you had a revolution in society and everyone started rioting and there was fires everywhere. The president got ousted. The central banker got put in jail. It was a shit show. It was a nightmare. So I just don't think they're going to be able to pull this one off, because the moment people start getting told what to do, how they have to do it, they might think they're going to get away with that, but I don't think it would. I think it would lead to a societal collapse. So yeah, I think the CBDCs would soon fail. And I don't think those expiry dates and those things, I think if we do see it, it will be for a short period of time. And then there'll be something after that. And I would say just prepare for the difficult times, that interim stage, because ultimately I think we go back to something more like a gold and silver backed system or a commodity. I think it'll be a commodity backed system, much like the designing in the East. This is already well underway in terms of development. So I think we eventually get to that in the West, but they may try to do the CBDC thing first.
Well, it makes sense then. If people don't want to invest in silver and gold, what are the next most reliable commodities to invest in, do you think?
Well, the great thing about silver and gold is people can hold them in their own person. You know, you can buy yourself a silver coin. Doesn't cost that much. Maybe it's £25 now for a silver coin. And you can hold that outside the system. It's not on any register. It doesn't have to have a counterparty. You know, if you put your money in the bank and the bank fails, you've got no money. You know, if the system gets reset and they say, oh, those old pounds are now worth zero in the new system, like they did in Nigeria, or they've done that in Lebanon, they've done that in many countries throughout history. They did it in the country I'm in. Overnight, they just reset the currency. People wake up. The old currency, it's worth nothing. That's because it's a fiat currency. So that's the great thing about gold and silver, is you can hold it in your person. Now, other commodities don't really give us that flexibility. If I give you a barrel of oil, it's a pretty big clunky thing, Johnny, and it's not so easy to carry around in your pocket or transfer over borders. Uranium, well, you don't want a big, you don't want a basement full of uranium. You might get some calls from some intelligence services if you have that. So other commodities are great. But there is an issue in that you need a vehicle to invest in them. I don't mean like a vehicle we drive, like some kind of financial vehicle. It could be stocks, shares, bonds. And there are some great ways to do that. You know, investing in gold and silver miners can be very lucrative if you understand the cycles. Uranium is a great commodity play right now because uranium is coming back in a big way. They've underinvested in uranium for a long, long time. And now we've got a supply and demand crunch coming. You've got commodities like lithium, for example. Lithium's down 50% this year. So again, lithium could come back in a big way in the coming years in terms of EVs and batteries. But like I said, the only problem with those things is you can't actually own it yourself. You could do, but it would be very difficult and very difficult to shift. Whereas the market, for example, for gold, it's a 24/7 liquid market. If I give you an ounce of gold, Johnny, and I dropped you in any country on planet Earth, in any point in history, you could go out and buy yourself a nice suit. You could get yourself a drink. You could take a woman on a date. You'd be fine.
If I got a pocket full of uranium, it's going real swell. Oh, no, my legs are swelling up is what I'm saying. Yeah, commodity.
Well, looking at the green screen behind you, it does kind of look like you've got uranium going on.
Oh, no one can see it. Should we go? I've got a British flag behind me. Don't tell the people at home. You're breaking the fourth wall. So commodities such as gold and silver, we've discussed, are relatively safe. Is there any reason why that might change in the future?
Yeah, there's all kinds of risk. You know, there's no real path forward that doesn't have risk. Like I said, the great thing about gold is it's got that stability. It's got about 5,000 years of history. Whenever they've reset currencies, it's always against gold. You know, if people are wondering why gold has gone from, you know, 5-6 years ago in the British pound, you could buy an ounce of gold for £900. 10 years before that, £200. Where are we today? £2,000. You know, that's because the currencies are dying against it. So that's probably the best bet for a safe haven asset. And you can diversify, of course. If you like cryptos and Bitcoin, you can have some of that. But I would say having a real physical thing is a little bit different. That's nice in this day and age where everything is digital and everything has counterparties, including the internet and the electric grid itself. You know, they do threaten us all the time with cyber attacks. Silver's a bit more chaotic, but the physical stuff you'd be fine with. And in terms of safety, I think, yeah, there's always the chance they go to try and confiscate it. They have tried to do that in the past many times. They usually fail because people are not want to give up their safe haven asset when the system's dying. They're saying, don't really want to go down with the ship. I'm not going to abide by this. And again, it's up to the individual how you play that. But I would say becoming financially impoverished during this period of history that will then make you 100% dependent on the state would be an extremely bad idea. So those are the real risks with these assets is, of course, yeah, that they try and take them, but it's always voluntary. You know, in 1933, when they did that in the US, people were told you must go take it to this location and we'll pay you for it. But of course they paid them $35 and then devalued the currency against gold. So all of a sudden, gold, it was $27. And then they increased the price of gold to $35. So it was a currency devaluation, which may be what they do this time. So yeah, those are the things you have to look out for. But otherwise, I think, yeah, there's not many things like it out there. And it's been used for thousands of years to protect people's wealth for this exact reason.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Mike, for coming on and bringing us some vital information, and keep up the sterling work. I'm sure you'll find that there's a joke in there somewhere. Thanks for coming on, my friend.
Cheers, Johnny. Have a great one.
Awesome. Well, we'll be right back with you after these messages on today's News Talk TNT.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver. And we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together.
Cutting through the clutter. This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. My next guest on this hour is releasing the second part of the SpaceCommune.com exclusive docuseries, Energy Empire, very soon. Fox Green is an independent filmmaker, journalist, podcast host, and artist fighting the information war against the forces of entropy and anti-humanism. He is an ardent advocate for peaceful cooperation between the brother nations of USA, China, and Russia. I had to double check then who brothers are who. You can follow him on X at Fox G Green or visit spacecommune.com. Fox, welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show. Congratulations on your launch of Energy Empire, which is a really well-produced docuseries for sure. When can we expect to see the second installment?
Well, I would love, thank you for that intro, by the way. And it's great to be here with you, Johnny. And I'd love to include the British nation along with, you know, the brother nations, right? The people of the British nation, they should be included as brothers. But yeah, for this next installment, I'm hoping to get it out within a month or so. I'm a two-man shop here. So if you want to fund us to help get this out quicker, we can certainly do that. But in the meantime, yeah, it's the series is probably going to come out every other month. It's going to be about a 5-part series. So expect, another installment within, the next month or so. And then another one, a few months after that, so on and so forth, through the end of the year.
That's brilliant. I love the fact that you're producing content like this. It's really well made. I watched the first part and I was really happy. It was just like really well produced, really well made. I think this is such an important voice you've got here as well, because it does contradict a lot of the status quo on both sides. So a lot of people are fundamentally programmed to despise Russia and China. Do you think that sort of propaganda-fueled hatred will be easy for people to leave behind, or do you think we're heading towards an eventual conflict between the normal foes?
Yeah, I think that's a great question to ask. It is the fundamental question of our time for people here living in the Western nations is why? Why are we at odds with these countries, right? Why do we see Russia and China as our enemy? And the only reason we can say is because it's the message from on high, right? There's literally no reason for us to be enemies with these nations who actually have extended olive branches to the West many times for cooperative partnership to rebuild our economies after deindustrialization. These countries want to work with us. It's our ruling elites who want to keep us apart. And the excuse over the course of the 20th century was communism, right? But communism was supposedly defeated. The USSR fell, the Cold War supposedly ended. In my opinion, it never actually did. And I think that that is the greatest moral crusade for people of our generations is to finally end this Cold War. Because that is what is creating all these conflicts in the world, not only hot military conflicts that like we see in Ukraine and we see in the Middle East, but economic warfare on people in our nations, in our Western nations, where we're being held back and we're being told, oh, we met the end of history, we're post-industrial nations, and we don't have to have economies anymore. We just have to get in the pod and eat the bugs, and that's it. Time's up and there's no more history, and we need a future. Human beings need a future to believe in. We need technology, we need growth, we want to keep making the world better for ourselves and our children. And if we can figure out how to sidestep these elites, who I think will eventually meet their own end by their own making, we can collaborate with countries who want to collaborate with us and create an era of peace, without war, and just development and space exploration, right? All these cool things that we could do if we work together instead of fighting each other.
Yeah, I love your positivity. Of course, I always love your positivity, Fox. I'm looking across at the chat quickly while you were speaking there, and saw little Carol say, "I like Russia so much, I went there for my holidays." She is against the grain though, Carol. And Lorianne just married a Russian, who's in the chat too. So I know that there's some sort of love towards the Russians here, that's for sure. And I've always found it a little bit of a bit of a comic book. It's a little bit of a cartoon, isn't it, what we see in between America and Russia. And if you go back and watch news from the 80s and you see how the Red Scare was being pushed upon people, it was truly a dramatic thing. So it's hard to get that out of the psyche. Going on, within Energy Empire, you talk about King Charles, RFK Jr., Vandana Shiva, their effects. So RFK Jr. is a massive part of what's happening on this election cycle, of course. So I'm really interested to find out what you think about his pick for the vice presidential candidate.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about her name is Nicole Shanahan, right? I didn't know anything about her before she was picked. It turns out she was Sergey I can't even remember his name, Sergey, the Google guy. She was married to him, and she's basically a Silicon Valley, you know, queen. And, you know, reading her Wikipedia page, the thing that popped out to me is that she got remarried in a druid ceremony, and all these connections to sort of this, you know, weird amalgamation of Gaia worship and paganism and Silicon Valley. And it's comical to me, because he's trying to run this campaign to the general public as somebody who's uniting the two parties, right? And crossing, healing the divide is his slogan. And he's speaking lots of truth to power. And he's saying a lot of things, which he's been skilled at his entire life, of saying a lot of things that people want to hear. But if you know any of the background, the connections, what he stands for, it's hilarious that he picked this woman to be his VP, because she fits all the categories: the Silicon Valley, Gaia worshiping, Californian ideology, Gaia worship, climate change. You know, he'll say things like, "Oh, the elites are using climate change as an authoritarian crackdown," but he is all for them. You know, right now they're starting to roll out smart grids here in New York State, which is scary. You know, people don't want it. People do not want smart grids. They don't want, you know, the current government in charge to be able to shut off devices whenever they please, or be monitoring constantly. But RFK pushed for this stuff. You know, that's his career is built on taking down nuclear energy, both in our country and in other countries, as the documentary explains, and destroying our infrastructure and making everything more expensive. You know, whenever he talks, I want to say, you raised our electricity bills. Are you going to do that in office too? I don't think most populists could run on the idea that they're going to raise your electricity bill. I don't think most people would like that.
I was listening. Parallel Mike was on in the first part of the show, and he was talking about the use of the Hegelian dialectic with some of what was happening. I feel that that's what RFK Jr. has been created for. Personally, I mean, that's my own personal opinion, that he's kind of he was suddenly positioned as the opposite of the Democrat, what the Democrat establishment was thinking, when in actual fact he's deeply involved in the Democratic establishment. So I do think there's a lot of that. There, listen, there's a question in the chat as well. Dark Commission said, the elites, quotation marks, are pushing the ultimate in scarcity systems. It seems to me that the infrastructure being built could just as easily be turned into a post-scarcity system. Thoughts? That's a hard one to answer. Do you have any thoughts on that, Fox?
Yeah, so like that is an interesting theory, and it came up. I just put out a short essay today, because it's Earth Day, in relationship to nuclear energy, which I'm a big advocate of. And this was part of the fear mongering back in the 1970s. Part of the fear mongering was, oh, about the waste, about, you know, the safety of it, whatnot. But a big part of it was saying, well, the only way you can have nuclear energy is if you have authoritarian controls, right? Because in a way, there's a seed of truth to that, because you do need a large entity that has a lot of control over moving parts to make something as big as nuclear energy to work. But that doesn't have to be a bad thing. We're given this false paradigm that either we return back to the land and live as peasants in a neo-feudal society and become self-sufficient like Ted Kaczynski living, you know, in the woods, or we go into Klaus Schwab's pod and eat the bugs and capitulate everything we have to, you know, the techno-feudalists. So it's feudalism either way. Either you can embrace technology and do it their way, or you can reject technology and go your own way. And either way, you're a peasant, right? So it's this false paradigm. And this has not always been the way. This is how great nations emerge, of sovereign citizens. But it requires people to participate in their government. It requires a nation of intelligent people who can think for themselves and don't just let the news get spoon-fed into their brains. And they have to resist the propaganda. They have to have a belief in mankind. It's all these things that have to come together in order to harness these big things that help humanity, like nuclear energy, and leverage them for the good. It's very hard to do. So we can't just retreat to our bubbles and say, it's too hard for me. I'm just going to worry about myself. It requires a very moral civilization of people to come together and harness these massive powers for good.
No one wants to be spoon-fed bugs in their brain. I agree with you on that one, Fox. Looking across again is Lorianne saying, please, God, no bugs for dinner. She did just tell me that her husband was actually born in Oregon, but from a Russian Orthodox family, so he's kept strictly to his Russian identity, of course, which is a funny identity because he's a funny fella and he's a really nice guy. Lots of Russians are. I know that's a shock for lots of people. So tell me, who is Vandana Shiva, and why has she been given such a grand platform?
Yeah, Vandana Shiva, so she's famous for being a sort of an eco-feminist voice for the last, since the 1970s, right? She emerged out of that original environmentalist movement. And she's most famous, I would say, probably for her railing against GMOs. So she's big against the GMOs. And GMOs, genetically modified organisms, which are used for farming, part of the Green Revolution, which created it's technology that was used to create abundant crops and sort of fight famine, which is a good thing, right, on its own. But she has problems with it, right? And she usually attacks people like Bill Gates, the World Economic Forum. She's part of this anti-globalization movement, which is something that is very appealing to people, right? Because it feels like that is the antithesis to Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. Well, the globalists want one world government. Well, the only way to resist that is to localize and to do everything locally, because localization is the opposite of globalization. Now, this is that same false dichotomy, right, that we fall into, where we can say, well, we're just worrying about our local. If you're only worrying about your local situation, you've become nothing but a primitive tribe, right? And so you're easy to conquer. So then Klaus Schwab says, great, you're just a little local economy. Well, what power do you have to stand up to Klaus Schwab? He's going to do whatever he wants. You've basically become a sitting duck. So this is how I see people like Vandana Shiva. She's sort of coaxing people into this false sense of security, a false sense of resistance against the powers that be. She acts like she's against all these people. And maybe she actually is in her own mind. It's hard to believe, though, because I think she's more clever than that. She's not a stupid person. She has a PhD in atomic physics, I believe. She's a well-pedigreed person. With friends in high places, she's good friends with King Charles. So, where do the lines start to get blurred? Who is she actually with? Who is she actually against? It's hard to say.
Yeah, Johnny Dollar in the chat saying Shiva is number one enemy of Gates, but that's again could easily be the Hegelian dialectic being produced for us all to believe that she's a good guy against the bad guy. So we got about a minute left. So why should people ignore Al Gore, Vandana Shiva, RFK Jr., Barack Obama, and King Charles, a bunch of nefarious guys, if you ask me, and instead believe Fox Green and the Space Commune team?
Well, I think that it's up to them, right? People should decide for themselves what the truth is. I think that every human being has the ability to see where the truth lies. And I'm not interested in peddling dishonesty. If I was, I'd probably have a bigger platform at this point. I've been doing this for a few years. That's not to say that I think everyone who's successful is bought and paid for and is dishonest, but I'm consistent in what I've been pushing, and it comes from my own life experiences here. It all draws back to what I'm doing here in the Hudson Valley, which is in opposition to Warren Buffett's son, Peter Buffett, who's doing a grand experiment here in Kingston, New York, of localism and degrowth. And he is very good friends with Vandana Shiva. So, it all ties back together.
Yeah, it does indeed. Hey, thanks for coming on to speak about Energy Empire. I'll be looking forward to seeing the second part and the rest of your work. Thanks for coming on, Fox.
Great. Thanks for having me, Johnny.
Awesome. Always a pleasure. Never a chore for me. Thank you for joining me for this first half. A very busy hour on the Johnny Bedmore Show, and it's always a pleasure to speak to Parallel Mike and Fox Green. We have two more very good guests lined up for the second half of the show, so don't go anywhere. I'm sure you're not. I see the chat. I'm looking down at the chat, trying to make sure I get all your views. They're all having such a long, complicated conversation. I love it loads. So keep talking, keep asking questions. Stay tuned for the second half of the Johnny Bedmore Show on Today's News Talk on TNT.